Good morning, and welcome to Simply Finance. It's Saturday, May 11th. On today's show, it's day three of the Aadhaar Housing Finance IPO with the latest subscription in GMP. Ford announces their new CFO, Lucid exec Sherry House, who will be the first woman to take on the top finance role. Plus, an expert reveals why you should stick to the 110 rule when buying a car. This coverage and more, up next. I'm David, and you're listening to Simply Finance. We start off with the initial public offering of Aadhaar Housing Finance, which garnered strong interest from investors on its final day. The IPO received an overall subscription of nearly 27 times, with particularly high demand from institutional buyers. For more, we're joined now by our markets correspondent. So what can you tell us about the level of interest in this IPO?
The numbers are quite striking, David. The qualified institutional buyer category was oversubscribed by more than 76 times. Even retail investors, who are typically more cautious, put in bids for over 2.5 times the shares available to them. This points to a high level of confidence in Aadhaar Housing Finance's prospects.
And what exactly does Aadhaar Housing Finance do? What's behind the optimism in the company?
Aadhaar Housing Finance focuses on providing home loans to lower income segments in India. Affordable housing has been a major policy push for the government in recent years, so Aadhaar is well positioned to benefit from that. The company has also been delivering strong financial results, with revenues and profits growing at over 18% and 22% respectively in the last fiscal year.
Let's talk about valuations. What kind of premium are we seeing in the gray market for Aadhaar Housing Finance shares?
The gray market premium currently stands at 63 rupees per share. Based on the upper end of the IPO price band, that translates to a potential listing day gain of 20%. Of course, gray market premiums are just informal indicators, but a figure of 20% does suggest robust demand and a healthy valuation for the company.
And finally, what will Aadhaar Housing Finance do with the proceeds from this IPO? What are its plans for the funds?
The net proceeds from the IPO will go towards meeting Aadhaar's future capital requirements, particularly for growing its lending business. Home loans are a capital-intensive business, so having a bigger pool of funds will allow Aadhaar to expand its loan book and reach more customers. A portion of the proceeds will also be used for general corporate expenses.
Thanks for that roundup of Aadhaar Housing Finance's IPO and the excitement surrounding it. Shifting gears to another major corporate development, Ford Motor Company is preparing for a CFO transition. The automotive giant announced on Friday that Sherry House, who most recently was CFO at electric vehicle maker Lucid Motors, is joining Ford as Vice President of Finance on June 3rd. House will succeed current CFO John Lawler in early 2025, becoming the first woman CFO in Ford's history. What can you tell us about Sherry House's background and what she brings to this role at Ford?
Sherry House has an impressive track record in the automotive and technology industries. Prior to her upcoming role at Ford, she served as CFO at Lucid Motors from 2021 to 2022, helping take the luxury electric vehicle company public. Before that, House held senior leadership positions at autonomous driving tech firm Waymo and had two stints at General Motors in areas like product engineering, corporate strategy, and business planning. Ford CEO Jim Farley highlighted how House brings an important leadership dimension as the company urgently builds out its EV business and generates new revenue streams. Her breadth of experience across finance, engineering, and strategy seems well-suited to help navigate Ford's transformation.
And current CFO John Lawler is taking on a new role as vice chair at Ford. What will his focus be in that position?
Yes, effective June 3rd, John Lawler will become Ford's vice chair in addition to staying on as CFO until Sherry House takes over that role next year. As vice chair, Lawler will lead Ford's long-term strategy, leveraging partnerships and working with leaders in key global markets like China and Europe to advance critical industry policies. This comes at a pivotal time for automakers undergoing what Ford calls a double transformation: the shift to digital, connected vehicles, and the transition from gas-powered to electric and hybrid models. Lawler, a 30-year Ford veteran who previously ran the China business and served as VP of strategy, seems poised to help steer Ford's strategic direction through this period of immense change and competition in the auto sector.
The electric vehicle price war has become a major concern for the industry and investors. How is Ford responding to the slowdown in U.S. EV sales?
Like other automakers, Ford is having to adapt its electric vehicle strategy as demand slows and price competition intensifies. Just last month, the company said it would delay rolling out new electric pickup trucks and a large electric SUV as it adds more gas-electric hybrids to its lineup. This allows Ford to still offer more fuel-efficient options while giving itself more time to reduce costs and improve the margins on its EVs before releasing those new all-electric models. It's a tricky balance of staying committed to electrification and emission reduction targets while also remaining pragmatic about near-term consumer demand and profitability. With an experienced new CFO in Sherry House and John Lawler helping plot long-term strategy, Ford will have to keep nimbly adjusting its EV roadmap in response to these rapidly evolving market dynamics.
Thanks for the insights and analysis today, Michael. It's certainly a lot to manage in this fast-changing automotive landscape. Speaking of cars, a personal finance expert is sounding the alarm on Americans' car buying habits. Sam Dogan, author of the Financial Samurai blog, says households should follow the 1/10 rule and spend no more than 10% of their annual gross income on a vehicle. For the median U.S. household earning $76,000 a year, that would mean spending just $1,700 on a car. Yet the average new car price today is a whopping $49,000. Here with more insight is Simply Finance correspondent Celeste. So why is Dogan so concerned about how much Americans are spending on cars?
Well, David, Dogan argues that cars are rapidly depreciating assets that come with a host of additional costs beyond the sticker price, like insurance, maintenance, and parking. He says spending too much on a vehicle ties up money that could be invested elsewhere and generating returns, like in the stock market. Dogan came up with the 1/10 rule back in 2009 when the government rolled out the Cash for Clunkers program to encourage people to trade in old cars and buy new ones. He thought it was a terrible financial move.
Does Dogan practice what he preaches when it comes to his own car purchases?
He does. Back in 2005, when Dogan was earning $250,000 a year as an investment banker, he bought a used 2000 Land Rover Discovery for just $8,000 and drove it for over a decade before trading it in. For the average American household, Dogan suggests buying a reliable used car like a Toyota Corolla or Honda Civic for under $8,000 rather than splurging on a brand new vehicle.
What about the role of easily accessible auto loans in encouraging Americans to spend more on cars than they can really afford?
Dogan sees troubling parallels between the auto loan market today and the housing market before the 2008 financial crisis. Automakers, dealers, and lenders work together to maximize how much people spend. We recently heard the story of a 28-year-old photographer who was lured into an $84,000 loan for a Chevy Tahoe she couldn't afford. The dealer made it seem like no big deal. But Dogan says almost no truly wealthy person would ever spend more than 10% of their income on a car.
So beyond just saving money, what is the goal of Dogan's 1/10 car buying rule?
Ultimately, he wants to encourage people to focus on increasing their income in order to afford the things they want, rather than just stretching their existing budget to the limit and jeopardizing their financial health. The 1/10 rule is meant to be a guideline to help people make sensible car buying decisions that protect their long-term financial security and wealth-building ability.
Thanks for sharing that insightful perspective on household car buying from Sam Dogan, Celeste. Shifting gears to the world of commercial real estate, it's been a busy week for lending, with several major deals closing across the country. Here to break down the top five financings is our Simply Finance correspondent. So what was the biggest deal of the week?
The largest financing was a $215 million construction loan provided by Kennedy Wilson and Related Fund Management to Grubb Properties. This will fund the development of a new 26-story multifamily apartment complex in the Long Island City neighborhood of Queens, New York. CBRE's debt team, including Elliot Vorace, Nate Satema, Kristen Riley, and Owen Hall, brokered this significant transaction.
Sounds like a huge project. Were there any other notable multifamily or condo deals?
Yes. The second largest deal was actually a $142 million construction loan for a condominium development in Miami. Related fund management, Kennedy Wilson Capital and United Fire Insurance Company teamed up to provide the financing to Related Group, Sidell Group, and TriCap for their project at 2700 NW 2nd Avenue.
Interesting. So a mix of multifamily and condos. How about on the commercial and industrial side? Any significant financings there?
Industrial properties saw some major activity this week. Lincoln Financial Group and PCCP lent $64 million to Bixby Land Company for a property in San Bernardino, California. Here on the East Coast, Integritas Capital provided $53 million to John Quadrozzi Jr. to refinance a vacant industrial space in Brooklyn. And in Massachusetts, Bain Capital Real Estate and Oliver Street Capital originated a $53 million loan to Barings for an industrial property in Peabody.
Those are some sizable industrial deals in major markets across the country. Anything else of note for the week in commercial real estate finance?
Those were the top five deals that closed or were announced between May 6th and May 10th. But there's always a steady stream of commercial real estate lending activity, especially with the economy and real estate markets continually evolving. It will be interesting to see if more mega deals like that $215 million Long Island City construction loan come through the pipeline in the weeks ahead.
We'll be tracking all the major developments here at Simply Finance, including this week's top commercial real estate financings. And with that, we wrap up our stories for today. Thanks for listening to Simply Finance. We'll see you back here tomorrow.